Good morning. Welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday morning here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive and deadly myths that are associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and with the media and with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting stories regarding these subjects, our mission here is to help everyone understand what is occurring behind the headlines, all while predicting how these events may shape our world over the next 20 years. Then during our second hour, we will turn to Yahweh, to his Torah, to his one and only covenant. And with his teaching, we will put you all in a place where you can replace religion with reason and engage in a relationship with God. Our number, should you wish to question, criticize, or affirm anything you hear today over the next 2 hours, is 877-300-7645. It is toll-free, 877-300-7645. This article is from the New York Times. It begins, it isn't supposed to be this way. After a recession, an improving economy is supposed to bring people back into the job market. The President of the United States won re-election and made all sorts of overtures as to how the economy was so much better than it was when he came into office, which wasn't actually true. This last month, the unemployment rate fell in America to 7.6%, and yet the number of people who were employed also fell. Here's the a very interesting truth that tells you how misleading the U.S. government is. Instead of the number of Americans in the labor force, those who have a job or who are looking for one, that number, the number of Americans who have a job or are looking for a job, fell by 500,000 people between February and March in 1 month, the government admitted on Friday. And the percentage of working age adults in the labor force, which called the participation rate, fell to 63.3%. It's the lowest figure since 1979. What does that mean? Now, the government has published the unemployment rate dropped. It's only 7.6%. Oh, what a manageable number that seems to be. Well, that's not the unemployment rate in America. Of course, the unemployment rate in America is comprised of those Americans who are out of a job, who don't even have a part-time job, who are not underemployed, who are not employed at all, but are actively searching for a job. That number is 7.6%. But what's the real unemployment number? Well, it's calculable because the participation rate, those working age adults, those would be adults between 20 and 55 years old, men and women between 20 and 55 years old, who are physically able to work, the percentage of them that are actually employed is 63%. Now, if you back off the unemployment searching numbers, you have, 55% of Americans either working or looking for a job. But folks, if 63% of Americans that are able to work, are the right age to work, are working, that means that 47% of Americans are unemployed. 47%. Not 7.6%. 47% of Americans that are the right age to work, that are able to work, aren't working. The unemployment rate, any way you look at the word unemployed, the percentage of Americans who are unemployed isn't 7.6%. It is 47%. Now, something tragically wrong with a country that is reporting one number when the number is that much higher than what it's reporting. And when you're in a situation like that, where the government's going to be that misleading, There's something, again, that's tragically wrong about that. So here we are on another massive deception perpetrated by the government. It's the same thing with the inflation rate. The government reporting inflation rate. Oh, it's 2 or 3%. It's manageable. There's nothing to it. You shouldn't be worrying. And all the time you're paying twice as much for gasoline for your car. You're paying a third more for groceries for your family. It is smoke and mirrors. It's the reason that the government does it. The reason that the government is being deceptive, is deceiving people, is really quite simple. And that is that the U.S. economy is now based entirely on smoke and mirrors, people's faith in it. The value of the currency has been devastated. It's worth approximately 2% of what it was worth back in the time that the Internal Revenue Service and the Federal Reserve were created. And the country is the most in debt of any nation in world history. Some $17 trillion in debt. And so the country is on the cusp of not even being able to service its debt. It's on the cusp of what happened in Cyprus, where the country will have to take a cup in hand and go to the world bankers and say, if you'll bail us out, we'll give you control of our country. That's where America is on the precipice of at this moment. And so the only way that you can keep people merrily going along, sacrificing their savings to inflation and sacrificing their earnings to taxation and being controlled by their government is to feed them propaganda, to feed them happy pills, to tell them how wonderful everything is. Boy, the unemployment rate's just 7.6%. No, it's six times that amount. Five times that amount. And that is where we are today. The government is deliberately lying across the board, almost every important topic, to keep people under control, to keep them going along. It is an extraordinarily sad situation because most people are buying into it. And over the weekend, I spent more time editing a book I wrote several years ago called Questioning Paul, where I began with a fairly soft approach to Paul, and through the chapters worked up and laid more and more evidence down where the case just became so overwhelming that there was no reason not to be judgmental. And I've gone back through the material, and I'm just no longer able to be so open to impossibilities. The evidence is so overwhelming, so blatantly obvious that Paul was a false apostle, false prophet, that everything he wrote was counterproductive and twisted, and that the founder of the Christian religion, and make no mistake, Paul was the founder of the Christian religion. You can't take anything, Yosha said, unless you take it out of context and twist it to create a new religion. It's impossible. And so the basis of the Christian religion, Paul and his letters, are repulsive. They are obviously false. And they're easy to prove false. You can use Yahweh's testimony. You can use Yahweh's testimony. You can use common sense. You can use just the approach that he uses, which is all faulty logic to make his case. And you wonder, how is it possible that billions of people are fooled by this idiot? I mean, Paul admitted, I'm demon-possessed, in his second letter to the Corinthians. In his conversion experience, he makes it as clear as words allow that the Spirit speaking to him was Satan. And yet, Christians don't care. Now they'll have sermon after sermon discussing the nuances of what was the thorn in Paul's side when Paul answers the question in the very same place that he makes the statement. He was demonically possessed. His revelations were inspired by Satan. And yet the Christian religion, which also exists based upon faith, finds it extraordinarily easy to manipulate the masses, just as this story about the true unemployment rate in America makes it so obvious, hovering around 40%, that people are easily misled. Speaking of tragedies and everyone being misled, 5 Egyptians were killed and 8 more were wounded in clashes between Christians and Muslims in a town near Cairo, security forces said. In some of the worst, they call it sectarian violence in Egypt in months. Christian-Muslim confrontations, you've got to love that, that it's being presented as if both religions are equally bad. Now, both religions are bad. They're just not equally bad, have increased in the Muslim-majority Egypt since the overthrow of former President Hosni Mubarak in 2011, which gave freer rein to, they say, hardline Islamists repressed under his rule. Mubarak did not repress fundamentalist Muslims. And now that fundamentalist Muslims are in charge of Egypt, and the confrontations against Christians have increased. Would you call it Christian-Muslim confrontations, or would you say that Muslims are now more free to victimize Christians? Again, it's all in the way that information is presented that causes people to be misled. 4 Christian cops and 1 Muslim were killed when the members of both communities started fighting and shooting at each other in Qusais, near the Egyptian capital. 4 Christians dead, 1 Muslim dead. They just started shooting at each other. What do you want to bet that the aggressors here were Muslims? An angry crowd smashed shops belonging to Christians. Boy, that sounds like the Christians are the victims, doesn't it? Residents said. A Reuters reporter saw a burned out Coptic daycare center and several shops that had been destroyed that belonged to Christian traders. Residents said that the violence broke out on Friday when a group of Christian children were drawing, and the Muslims did not like their drawings. We'll return in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're covering a story in Egypt. It's another story where the media would have you believe that the problem is with Christians pestering Muslims. Well, Reuters reporters saw what looked like a swastika drawn on a wall. Muslims residents said that drawing offended them because it looked more to them like a cross than a swastika. I saw kids drawing on the wall after afternoon prayers, so I grabbed some of them. I told them to remove what they had written, said Mahmoud Al-Aufi, a Muslim resident. Then another man arrived and started beating the children. Drawing a large crowd, the situation escalated when someone drew a gun and fired into the air, killing one boy with his gun. Suddenly, the area was full of weapons, while weeping women sat nearby, showing pictures of a man they said had been killed during the clashes. The sectarian violence comes as Egyptians struggle with severe economic crisis, high inflations, and 2 years of political upheaval as a result of the fundamentalist Muslims coming to power. It is interesting here that Christian children were drawing. Boy, drawing. That was their crime. They were drawing. And Muslims decided that the best way to deal with someone drawing was to drag them, tell them to remove what they had written because we won't tolerate anybody else's drawings. And then other Muslims arrived to beat the children. It is sick what the religion of Islam does to people. Now, that's not to say that the religion of Christianity is good. The Christians who are responding to this, They shouted, "With our blood and with our soul, we will sacrifice ourselves for the cross," the crowd intoned. Purely pagan symbol. No cross in the Greek manuscripts. The word, the Greek word is steros, is based on histemi. It means to stand so as to enable someone to stand. Steros means upright pole, upright pillar. The upright one, Edon, is the upright pillar of the tabernacle. Concept used in the Torah to speak of the corporeal manifestation of Yahweh, Yahusha. So there is no cross. The cross is a purely pagan symbol. It was first derived because the sun crosses the constellation of Taurus the bull on Easter Sunday during the vernal equinox. That's where it came from. Tammuz name was a cross, capital T. That began the reverence for cross. Of course, the most famous religious cross is the Ankh in Egypt, where it is a symbol of the sun's orbit above a cross, making a combination of the cross and the pagan sun god worship complete. When Christians believe that the sum total of what occurred on a cross, all they do is draw attention to Passover. They don't even know it's Passover. But if they did know it was Passover and observed it and stopped there, which they do, then they would become immortal but eternally separated from God, and therefore they would be no different than Satan himself. Clashes erupted immediately after the service between the emerging mourners and a crowd outside the cathedral. It was unclear who started the violence, but later dozens of riot police with armored vehicles and tear gas cannons appeared to enter the fray on the side of the crowds of young Muslim men who were throwing rocks and bombs at the mourners. So here is the Egyptian police, the security forces in Egypt. They engaged. But did they engage to protect the minority? Copt Christians represent a little less than 10% of the Egyptian population, with 90%+ being Muslim. Did they engage to protect the victims? No. The police joined the fray on the side of the Muslim men who were throwing rocks and firebombs at the Christian mourners. In what seemed like a siege of the cathedral, tear gas canisters fell inside its walls of the compound, sending gas into the sanctuary and two nuns running for shelter in a nearby loading dock. You know who manufactured the tear gas? Do you know who approved the sale of the tear gas that is being used to allow Muslims to attack Christians more freely in Egypt? The United States. Hillary Rotten Clinton signed the authorization. The tear gas was manufactured in the United States and approved for sale by the U.S. State Department so that the Muslims in Egypt could more easily control Christians. A story taking place in Egypt where the media source wanted you to believe that that Christians and Muslims were back at it, and that the Christians somehow were instigating the violence. And yet, as you get deeper into the story, you find that not only was the Christian crime children doodling, but that Muslims began this fight. And that when the government had the opportunity to intervene and protect the minority against the aggressive religious majority, that the security forces decided that they would side with the aggressor, with the majority, and to pummel the minority, using, of course, American-supplied tear gas. Later, some of the young civilians who had been attacking the cathedral, now young civilians. Why not just call them Muslim boys? Later, some of the Muslim boys who had been attacking the Christian cathedral switched to taunts, making lewd gestures involving the sign of the cross. You can almost visualize their actions. The nature of Islam, taunts. The whole Quran is filled with nothing but lewd gestures and taunts. It's a natural extension of the religion. The riot police made no attempt to stop them, either from throwing rocks toward the cathedral or insulting and taunting the Christians. Quote, the police are not trying to protect us or do anything to stop the violence, said Eskander, a Coptic Christian activist. On the contrary, they are actively aiding the people in civilian clothes, attacking the Christians, he said. Not that sectarian animosities were absent under Mubarak. Cops suffered from discrimination as well as recurring episodes of sectarian violence, and the Mubarak government worsened the problem by denying the existence of domestic sectarianism and pinning the blame on local conflicts or foreign conspiracies. Yes, it has been hell on Christians living in Egypt. They have been the subject of terrorism. They have been the subjects of rape. They have been the subjects of diminished status, where they're overly taxed and get no representation in the government. They are treated in a discriminatory fashion, that if it had been an issue of race as opposed to religion, the entire world would have been on them like the world was on the Republic of South Africa. Because the conditions perpetrated on the Christians in Egypt have for centuries been worse even than the conditions that were perpetrated on Africans in the Republic of South Africa. But no, because it is Islam, the world is afraid to speak out honestly about Islam, even to blame Islam. And now, of course, the situation is vastly worse because fundamentalist Muslims are in control of the country. This was one of those many reformations in the Islamic world where a secular dictator was replaced by an Islamic dictator, making the situation vastly worse. This story is the follow-up story to that. I saw it in my inbox this morning, and it is the reason I made the comments I did during the last report. Two U.S. companies have shipped crowd control munitions and tear gas to Egypt. One firm repeatedly in the midst of the violent and awful, often lethal crackdowns on protesters by security forces, according to an Amnesty International investigation. The human rights group has asked for Hillary Clinton, the U.S. Secretary of the State at the time, to stop granting licenses for tear gas and other munitions pending an investigation into its misuse by the Egyptian forces. So back at the time that Hillary Clinton was still Secretary of State, Amnesty International did an investigation and found out that the lethal force that the Egyptian government was using against the peaceful protests against Christians and against secularists who were protesting the Islamic government, that the munitions were supplied by the United States. And it quietly tried to encourage the United States to do the right thing and to stop supplying them. But the United States did what it normally does. It continued to be on the wrong side. And so Amnesty International has finally gone public with their investigation. Combined Systems, Inc., CSI, based in Jamestown, Pennsylvania, has sent at least three arms delivery to Egypt since the protests began in Tahrir Square on the 25th of January, according to Amnesty International. The most recent delivery, addressed to the Interior Ministry, arrived at the port of Adabia near the Suez on the 26th of November, only 48 hours after days of bloody clashes between the Interior Ministry troops and protesters that left a dozen people dead and thousands injured. The means to kill is something that the United States owns a monopoly on. We provide more deadly weapons, more crowd control weapons than anyone else. And we supply those weapons to Islamic governments. We not only deploy them in a nation that says it's for freedom, and a nation that says it's all for freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, and yet the United States is the prime manufacturer the world over of weapons that prevent that. And we give those weapons to nations who kill their own citizens. Amnesty said the November shipment contained at least 7 tons of ammunition smoke, which includes chemical irritants and crowd control agents such as tear gas. The U.S. State Department, which has condemned the excessive use of force on demonstrators in Cairo, has begun an investigation into misuse of tear gas by the Egyptian authorities and has confirmed that 2 export licenses for tear gas and riot control agents from U.S. companies were approved and that they have arrived in Egypt. Amnesty arms expert Brian Wood condemned the State Department as irresponsible for approving them. Irresponsible, would you say immoral? He said these licenses were authorized during a period where the Egyptian government responded to protests using excessive and often lethal force. It is inconceivable that the U.S. authorities did not know of the evidence of widely documented abuses by the Egyptian security forces. These licenses should not have been granted. And this past week, they were used by the security forces to help Muslims firebomb Christian churches, Christian homes, and Christian stores. The Egyptian security forces have a reputation for violations against human rights. The U.S. should suspend these supplies pending proper changes in the way they deal with crowd control. The more you look, the more impossible it becomes to be informed, to be rational, to be moral, and to be patriotic if you're an American. The only way to be patriotic is either to be ignorant or immoral. That's not much of a choice, is it? Here's another story that might get your attention. A recent PowerPoint presentation used by the Army Reserve of Pennsylvania for training purposes indicates that the organization considers Christians, Catholics, and Mormons to be potentially as dangerous, if not more dangerous, than the Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda, or Hamas. The Army Reserve, branch of the U.S. military, the U.S. Army, Army Reserve of Pennsylvania, for training purposes. Now, the Army Reserve, this is, you know, keep this in mind. The Reserve is used principally as a means of control within the United States. So as a means to control in the United States, to look at what kind of a foe that the Army Reserve would most likely in Pennsylvania be deployed against for training purposes, they are told that their most vicious enemy is Christians, Catholics, and Mormons. Oh, not the Muslim Brotherhood, not Islam, not Hamas. The presentation, which was posted online by the legal group Alliance Defending Freedom, likely will go unnoticed by many. Unfortunately, it offers a disturbing glimpse into some of the training and education in the U.S. military. Approximately 24 slides into the presentation, one slide lists 18 different groups under the title of religious extremism. At the top of the list is evangelical Christianity, followed then by the Muslim Brotherhood. Next is ultra-Orthodox Jews. Christian identity, whatever that might be, and then Al-Qaeda and Hamas. Catholicism appears further down the list and is followed by Sunni Muslims, Mormons, and simply a label, Islamophobia. So if you are speaking out against Islam, according to the United States, you are a foe that the U.S. military has to be trained to oppose. Muslims, fundamentalist Muslims, flew planes into our buildings on 9/11. Muslims around the world are trained and indoctrinated to hate and given the opportunity to kill Christians, Americans in particular. And yet, if you expose the reality that Muhammad was a terrorist and that the Quran is a declaration of war against all humankind, if you tell people the truth and you warn them that there is an enormous amount of prophecies in Yahweh's Torah, prophets, and Psalms that reveal that Muslims unified are going to start a war against Israel that's going to spread around the world, where half the world's population are going to die. If you reveal his prophecies vis-a-vis the influence of Islam, you are a religious extremist. Even if you hate religion, even if you're opposed to religion, even if you are not part of any religion, but according to the United States Army, you are a religious extremist and you need to be controlled. The Army reservists are being trained to control you, to silence you, to do away with you. Sobering, isn't it? We're considering the training that is being given the U.S. Army Reserve so that they can control Americans in the future with an eye to the enemy, which is considered to be extremism. This view has been promoted by the outgoing president, King George II, and the incoming president, Barack Hussein Obama, that the enemy is not Islam. The enemy is not fascism. The enemy is extremism, because if the enemy is extremism, then you can attack those who are opposed to whatever position you are articulating. A great example of the enemy being recast as extremism was when Barack Obama, knowing full well that fundamentalist Muslims were responsible for the killing of the U.S. ambassador in Libya, instead blamed the attack on religious extremism, saying that the reason for the attack, the motivation for the attack, the cause of the attack, was an extremist Christian film misrepresenting Muhammad. Now, mind you, the film accurately portrayed Muhammad. But the bottom line here is that he knew for certain that that was not the cause of the attack, and yet so that he could blame Christian extremism as the enemy, as the reason for the attack, the President of the United States deliberately, purposefully, knowingly lied. And now extremism is being presented as a complex phenomenon to the U.S. military. It is defined by beliefs, attitudes, feelings, actions, or strategies of a character removed from the ordinary. Now, ordinary, of course, is those who ascribe to patriotism, those who play by the normal political in the normal political venues, those who are going along, easily controlled, easily manipulated, they're considered ordinary. But if you are somebody that scratches beneath the surface, if you really want to know the truth, if you're able to handle the truth, if you by all means are willing to share the truth, you cease to be ordinary. Now, because ordinary is subjective, no religious group would label itself extreme or its doctrine extremism, according to the U.S. Army training materials. However, religious extremism is not limited to any single religion, ethnic group, or region of the world. Now, mind you, that there's only one fundamentalist form of religion that is universally violent today. There's one religion, when practiced as its Quran and Hadith dictate as its leader himself behaved. There's only one religion. When practiced in accordance with the founder of that religion, is universally violent. All you have to do is open your eyes and it's obvious. It's Islam. 99% of terrorist acts are perpetrated by Muslims. But the United States military wants its soldiers to believe that the religious extremism is not limited to a singular group. Nope. You should not consider the facts that Muslims perpetrate 99% of terrorist acts. You should not look at the facts that Muslims bombed New York and Washington, killing 3,000 of your citizens. Don't look at that. Let's ignore that reality. Let's just say that all religious extremism is equally capable of being violent. And of course, now the extremism is defined by any group that thinks their traditions, their beliefs are the only right way, and that others are practicing whatever it is that they're advancing the wrong way, and seeing and believing that their faith, religion is superior to others. Guess what the most opinionated, the most restrictive, the most extreme religious position is in America? Political correctness. Socialist secular humanism. Won't tolerate a rival. If someone says, you know, I want to talk to you about whether or not homosexuality is normal, you're shut down. If you want to articulate a position that isn't fully in accord with the extreme views of socialist secular humanism, you can't be a teacher in this country. You can't be a politician in this country. You can't work in the media in this country. Wholly intolerant, completely extreme. It is the most extremist view in the country. And yet it is that extremist view that is now labeling everything else, that particularly that which opposes it, extremist. It is pure hypocrisy. It is irrational. And yet this is what's being taught to the U.S. military. And by the way, the list of hate groups was supplied by the Southern Poverty Law Center because they don't like Christian apostles.
I had tried everything. I'd cut back the amount of food I was eating. I was lifting weights and jogging, but nothing was working. My body was literally starving for minerals and trace elements.